Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Usagi Pod Jimbo podcast, and I got a good episode for you guys today. I think all of them are actually pretty good episodes, not gonna lie, but we are looking at issue 13 of the Mirage Run. I believe it's issue 13. Yes, it is issue 13 we are looking at today for volume 2, and we are almost done with the Mirage Run. We are looking at Runaways Part 1, as well as Black Soul, which is a short story. Jay continuing his journey to find and kill Usagi for what he did to him back in Circles. We got a good one for you guys today, like I said. And also, before we start, like, subscribe, comment, leave feedback on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps the podcast grow. Make sure to rate the podcasts. That helps. And share the podcast. But let's get into this without further ado. And we'll get started. So our story starts out. It's been some time, I think, since Usagi and Gin parted ways with Stray Dog. And Gin and Usagi are walking under this tree. And I believe it's an apple tree, if I remember correctly. It looks like an apple tree. And Gin says, well, this is where we part company. And Usagi's like, again, and we seem to keep bumping into each other all the time recently. And Gin uses his sword to get an apple. And he's like, hey, if that is get me in the middle of stuff, we wouldn't be getting together and getting into any mischief. Because he's like, hey, you shouldn't be meddling in my profession. And Usagi's like, it was intentional. Come on, Gin. And he's like, Gin says, intentional or not, you still got a nice reward for those bandits. As he gets his apple with the help of gravity, all the apples end up falling on top of Usagi's head, and Usagi says, ouch, that hurt. I mean, why would Gin do that? I guess so. You gotta do that. You gotta play a little trick on your best friend, your self-proclaimed best friend, I guess you could say, or his self-proclaimed best friend, because Gin says that Usagi is his best friend. Gin starts to walk away, and he's like, hey, you know, if it wasn't for the money that I helped you get, you know, you would be out here starving and whatnot. And he takes a bite of his apple and walks away, and he's like, you know, Long Ears, it's always good to see you again, but, you know, I gotta hit the road and go. And Usagi says that he actually likes it when they part ways, or part company, he should say. And they part ways, and he's like, I'll see you next time, Usagi. And, you know, Usagi says, you know, likewise, I'll see you again. And Usagi walks off, and he says, man, what a character Gin is. I'm really going to miss him. So you obviously know there is some sort of camaraderie between the two samurai, which I do happen to actually really, really like. That aspect, like, I love that Usagi has a best friend / traveling companion from time to time that he can get into, like, little fun little disagreements with, you know, very much like a brother relationship I feel like they have. Moving along, sometime later, we don't know exactly how long it's been, but sometime later, Usagi ends up in a village. We don't know what village it is, but he is looking to buy some broiled cuttlefish, please. And heavy on the tentacles, he says, which cuttlefish, I believe, is some type of squid, I believe. I love the guy in the background. He is picking his nose. He's just digging his finger in his nose. I love that little detail. It's so funny, you know. But the merchant ends up giving Usagi his cuttlefish on a stick with extra tentacles. And he's like, be careful, it's hot, you know. Oh, you're new in town. He's like, yeah, I'm new in town. I'm just passing through. It's been some time since I've actually been here. And Usagi happens to hear a noise off the other way. He's like, look, there's some commotion going on up the street, you know, a procession of some sort. It seems like probably some big shot coming into town, the merchant says. And then like, make way, get it, stand aside. And Usagi's like, I'm getting out of here before something happens. Because you know what happened last time? Somebody died when they were told to make way for Usagi. You know, back in the Gin story, I believe. I forget what his name is. Oh, it was a while since I've covered that story. But, yeah. God, I can't remember what was his name? I forget what his name was. But Usagi's like, man, I gotta get out of here. He starts to leave. And you hear, make way, move aside for Lady Hirano. And Usagi perks up and his eyes get really big. And he's like, huh, Lady Hirano, I haven't heard that name in quite some time. And Usagi, like I said, Usagi said, Hirano, he hasn't heard that name in quite some time. He hasn't encountered that name in years. He was actually still serving as a retainer for Lord Mifune at the time. So we go into a flashback and we see Gunichi, of all people, which I am very surprised to see. I mean, even though I know it's a flashback, he was the first guy we encountered in the issue one of Usagi, where he hunted him down to kill him for actually betraying Lord Mifune. And Gunichi comes in and Usagi is actually painting a picture. And he's like, oh, Usagi, another painting for your girlfriend? You know, and he's like, oh, Gunichi, what brings you here? And Gunichi's like, I've got a letter for you. And Usagi opens it up and he's like, oh, it's a letter from my father. It's news from home. And he opens it up and he has this very sad look on his face. And Gunichi's like, bad news? And he's like, yeah, Mariko is married. She and Kenichi wed a few days ago. And Usagi's expression turns and his emotion turns from sadness to going into almost like a rage. He's very angry. It seems like he gets up and he's like, where are my swords? I've got to go home. And Gunichi's like, no, as a friend, let me give you some advice. And Usagi slaps Gunichi's hand away and he's like, let me go. And Gunichi's like, you are too young, Usagi, but a samurai is never governed by his emotions. You have a duty to Lord Mifune, which Gunichi actually is right in this little scenario. They shouldn't really be emotion bound or governed by their emotions, you know, and it's not really going too well for Usagi. And Gunichi says that, you know, your girl is married. You know, what's done is done. If you leave now, you will have failed your lord. That will dishonor you as a samurai. And Usagi throws open the door, looks back at Gunichi, and he's like, duty, honor, these are what drove Mariko and I apart in the first place. Which, those words cut deep if you know the story behind Mariko and Usagi. Those words definitely cut deep. Gunichi says, if you go to her now, you will lose all you have worked for without gaining a thing, he says. And take my advice. Wait a while. Give yourself some time to think. And Usagi's like, what do you mean? And Gunichi's like, as, you know, Princess Takane, I don't know how to say it. I think it's Takana Kiyuko, is betrothed to Lord Hirano in an effort to form a stronger alliance between the two clans. And apparently, Lord Mifune is in favor of this arranged marriage. And originally, Gunichi was going to go do basically guard duty and protect the princess. And he's like, I kind of feel like he doesn't really want to do it in this situation, it seems like. He's like, however, you know, I think you should actually take my place and go escort the princess. It's just a babysitting gig, you know. It's not going to be anything really. Gunichi leaves and he's like, let me know your decision later. And we find what Usagi's decision actually is. Usagi is leading probably over 100 men in this escorting mission, as we will call it. And Usagi, he's riding at the front of the pack. And they're definitely making their presence known, I feel like. They're not hiding this at all. They're very much out in the open and whatnot. Usagi happens to say that, oh, we're making good time, you know, princess. You know, hope the journey is not too unpleasant for you. And she slams the door. And Usagi remarks that she is rude and a spoiled brat. And he happens to just ride off. And as he's riding off, hundreds upon hundreds of arrows, thousands of arrows, it seems like, rain down on the company that he is riding with. And Neko ninjas come out of the woodwork. It very much reminds me of a Where's Waldo in this one giant panel where all these Neko ninjas are going after Lord Mifune's men. And I'm trying to pinpoint where exactly is Usagi in this one picture. I still have yet to find him. As the Neko ninjas come down upon the fellowship party, whatever you want to call them, they actually make it to the princess's little carriage that she has. And she's like, no, no. And one of the Neko ninjas grabs her. And he actually falls down because he gets stricken down on the back. And the princess is grabbed and thrown up on Usagi's horse. Usagi grabs her and he tells her to hold on as he fights valiantly through the swarm of Neko ninjas. And he tries to get through, but alas, he doesn't really get that far, it seems like, because his horse ends up dying because his horse ended up getting shot several times with an arrow. They fall and tumble. And Usagi goes to grab the princess. And she's like, stop, you're hurting me. And he's like, get up or die. Usagi and Kuniko are running through the forest. Kuniko is panting. She's like, I can't go on. Usagi throws her behind him, telling her to get behind me. And she says, be quiet. And he covers her mouth. They see some Neko ninjas surveying the area, trying to find Usagi and the princess. It doesn't really work out so well. Sometime later, so it's been some time since Usagi had his mouth over this princess's, had his hand over the princess's mouth, trying to keep her quiet and calm, cool and collected. Usagi said that they're gone. Kuniko screams out and she's like, ah, I can't believe your filthy hands touched me. And she's like, who are you? What's going on? Get your hands off me, she says. And he's like, my name is Miyamoto Usagi. He gives the spiel that he always gives, you know. And she's like, thanks to you, I have been abused. I have never been abused in my life, she says. Look at me. I'm covered with bruises, scratches. I swear I'll have your head in payment for this mistreatment. Usagi's like, fair enough. Okay, go ahead. You know, I have nothing else to live for, is what Usagi says, basically. All I really have to do is deliver you to Lord Hirano, and that is that, you know. And the princess is like, can we talk to them? And Usagi's like, come on, you know, really, can we actually talk to them? No, we can't talk to them. They're assassins trying to kill you, obviously. And Usagi is really not in a bad mood. And he's definitely taking his anger out on Kuniko. Kuniko kind of folds her arms over, looks off to the side, and she's like, she gives a big, if you think I'm going with you, I'm going to follow you, you got another thing coming, I'm not going to follow you. Usagi doesn't care anymore. He just walks off, and Kuniko actually runs after him, you know, because obviously we know this is the only protection that she actually has is Usagi. Hours later, Usagi and Kuniko are walking, and Usagi is trying to basically think about why exactly the Neko ninjas attacked them. He wants to know why they want to assassinate her, what's actually going on, you know, are they aligned with Lord Hikiji, or Lord Hirata. You know, they don't really know which one, but apparently one of them sent the ninjas, but we just don't know who. I'm gonna go lean towards more Lord Hikiji, just saying. Usagi asks Kinuko if she is actually in favor of the marriage, and she says such a union would be beneficial to both clans. And Usagi's like, yeah, it would be beneficial to both clans, but that's something that you've been basically trained to say from your clan elders. And it doesn't really answer Usagi's question one bit, is what he says. And she gets a little angry at him, and she's like, who are you, my interrogator? And Usagi's like, I thought that since you were going to take my head anyways, I might as well satisfy my curiosity about you. And she's like, you dastardly, just disrespectful, dastardly beast. And Usagi's like, come on, it's getting dark, we gotta get out of here. Later on, it's nighttime now, and we see some old familiar faces. We see the husband and wife woodcutter team, you know, the monkeys that cut the wood and whatnot. We haven't seen them in quite a while, I feel like, to be honest. I don't remember the last time I actually saw the woodcutters. But we see them at home. They're inside, you know, cutting some wood, getting wood ready to sell. And they hear a noise. They go investigate, and all their clothes have been stolen off the pole, and their garden ends up getting raided. I mean, they needed the stuff. Why couldn't they just ask? I guess it was different times back then. But man, I do feel bad for the woodcutters. They work so hard, and things always keep happening to them in the background of different stories and whatnot, you know. But they did get that one reward back in the Shogun's gift. So they do have a little bit of money. But this story is actually before that, because it's a flashback, you know. Kinuko complains that she is being forced to wear this ugly kimono, and it's coarse. It will scratch me raw, apparently, because it's not made out of the finest material. And Usagi's like, come on, you know, it would be basically be too conspicuous if you were dressed in silk, princess, you know. Like, and she's like, no, you know, it's not like that, you know. I'm not just into the finer things in life. She's basically complaining, you know, what you did. Look what you did to my hair, stuff like that, you know. She is basically very much the cookie cutter version of what a princess will definitely be like. She's very sheltered and whatnot, and complaining about having to change her clothes and stuff like that. She even complains about the food that Usagi gathered for her, and she hates it. And, you know, she's like, why can't we stay at an inn? You know, Usagi's like, we can't stay at an inn because we have to basically hide from the people who are trying to kill you and trying to kill me because I'm protecting you. Kinuko complains that Usagi is just being mean and rude to her. And Usagi tells her to shh, be quiet. And who happens to pop out but a bunch of Neko ninjas, actually five of them to be exact. And Usagi takes them out swiftly in this really, really cool scene. Like, I love the way, like, this is all drawn. It's all drawn in a very, very well done, like, action, like, way. Very dynamic action scene. Usagi tells Kinuko to stay behind him, and he wants to know, he's like, there were five of you ninjas, obviously, just a scouting party, looking for us. Where are the rest of your comrades? Usagi says to the one remaining live scout ninja. And he asks the ninja, who exactly wants the princess dead? And the ninja is like, I will die before I betray my clan, samurai. And I love the scene. Like, I love the way it's drawn. Because he throws out a smoke bomb and he runs away. He's like, I've got to report their whereabouts to the chief, you know. What's going on? He gets away, and he hears like this shh sound, and he's like, ah! And we see the sword come down, but we don't actually know who exactly killed the ninja. It wasn't necessarily clear, I feel like. it could have been Usagi or it could have been somebody else. I really don't know in this situation. Let me know down below, comment, if you know who actually killed this lone ninja. But guessing by the next couple panels, Usagi and Kinako are actually separated. She is scared now. And she runs and trying to find Usagi, and she actually does find Usagi. So it could have been maybe Usagi killed the ninja. I don't know. But it's very interesting to say the least, you know. She finds Usagi and she says, "Usagi, I was so afraid." And she goes and runs up to him and gives him a big old hug and starts sobbing and crying. And she's like, "Oh, forgive me." And she starts to sob, you know. "I've been acting so harshly towards you. I blamed you for delivering me into a loveless marriage." And we get this interesting look between Usagi and Kinako, almost like something is going to happen between the two. Maybe kiss, who knows? There seems to be a spark running around in their heads. You know, maybe they both zinged, as the kids like to say. Do kids still say that nowadays? I don't know. And a big pop happens, and Usagi wakes up from his daydream. And you hear, "Hey, you, I said, quit daydreaming and get out of the road, you know, get out of the procession." And we see Usagi steps back, and we see all these soldiers, and we see, "Make way, clear the way, clear the streets, show respect and bow down to Lady Hirano." And that's where this issue ends. This issue was really, really interesting, I have to say. It's interesting to go back and look back at a story that, you know, that is basically like a flashback, a big old flashback. And, you know, we get to look into more of Usagi's past, because we do know that Usagi does have an unrequited love for Mariko. But we never really get to see a lot of Usagi when he is a retainer for Lord Mifune. And this is interesting to see. And I really liked it, because we got to see a very much younger Usagi, you know, before all the horrible things happened to him, when Gunichi actually betrayed them, yeah, and whatnot. And it was interesting to see Gunichi again in a different light, because we all know Gunichi's like not the best guy out there, and he did some terrible things, and he was a turncoat, you know, one might say, and whatnot. But I really liked seeing and reading this story. It was a lot of fun, you know, seeing how Usagi reacted to the marriage announcement of Mariko and Kenichi was really interesting to see, and how like Usagi's character like flipped on a dime, and he became so mad and so enraged, and it affected the way he actually, you know, performed his duties as a samurai. It was really, really interesting, to say the least. But I like it that we're filling in gaps in between Usagi's story. We're layering Usagi's character development and growing his character. Usagi definitely has flaws, you know, and jealousy just so happens to be one of them. You know, he is jealous that Kenichi got Mariko's hand in marriage. You know, that was one thing that Usagi really, really wanted, even in circles. You know, he really wanted to be with Mariko, but alas, he couldn't. You know, Mariko is the one that definitely got away. And I found it really interesting, and we'll get into it more later on when we talk about part two of Runaways, but how Usagi, which we never heard about before, if I remember correctly, Usagi's only ever talked about loving Mariko, but we've never seen him love anybody else romantically. So throwing in Kinako, you know, is a real interesting wrench to throw into the cog of Usagi. You know, it's very much she's possibly, you know, his Mary Jane, and then, you know, Mariko is, you know, his Gwen Stacy of all people, you know. Hopefully, you know, Mariko doesn't die. Yeah, it's really interesting to see, to bring up all these different things in Usagi's past. And we're going to move forward talking about part two next episode. But now we are going to move in to the short story Black Soul, which is a continuation of Jay's story that has been going on through the backdrop of these last couple stories going on, where Jay survived the fall off the cliff in the Circles storyline. And Jay is coming back to prominence. So let's get into that and talk about that issue. So the Black Soul story starts out where it's a dark and stormy, rainy night. It's raining very hard. We see these two characters in this, I want to say it's a house. I want to say it's a very small house. It's like a farmland that they're on. And, you know, one of the little girl, she tells her grandfather, you know, she asks him, "Would you like some more barley rice?" She asks. And he's like, "No, you eat it." Kyoko is her name. "I promised your parents before they died that I would take care of you." And Kyoko is like, "Oh, I'm fine. You know, Oja-san," which is grandfather in Japanese, "you should keep up your strength. You know, you gotta eat it." And they hear this knock at the door, a bang, 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 and they're like, "Open up!" And Kinako is like, "Who could this be at this time of night? You know, in this weather, you know, a night like this, you know, who could be here? You know?" Her grandfather is like, "Oh, all is welcome. Whoever it is, you're welcomed here. You know, come in. It's unlocked." And we see these brigands, and they look kind of familiar. I want to say they might be from the Slaver's story, but I don't know. One of them has like a scar across his face. There's three of them. There's three, these three unruly vagabonds, you know, these brigands. They're like, "Oh, peasants, we want shelter and food. That's what they want." And the old man is like, "Oh, of course, you know, come in. We're poor farmers, but you know, we can offer you a little something." And the main guy with the scar, he slaps Hinako's grandfather. And he's like, "You can offer us nothing. We take what we want." The man tells them to move aside for you filthy peasants, you know. And they're like, "Oh, stop, don't hurt us, you know. You can have what you want, you know." And so they take what they want. They take food and drink. They gobble it all down and drink up. They are definitely munching and crunching and drinking and eating some barley rice, you know. And they're like, "More, we want more." And the old man's like, "Sorry, but that's all we have. We were planning to actually go into town for supplies soon." And the one guy is like, "We're still hungry. We want more." And they're like, but I told you we don't have any more. You clean this out." And they think that the peasants are actually lying. They call them lying scum. And they, one of them smacks the grandfather with the bowl that he is holding on the head and cracks it over his head. And he's like, "I know you're hiding a hidden ladder somewhere in here, you know. Now show us where you're hiding your supplies." And the other guys pipe up and they're like, "Yeah, you know, while you're at it, bring us out all your money too." And he's like, "Yeah, you won't have to worry about buying any more supplies then." And the grandfather is like, "No, please don't. Like, don't hurt me. You can have anything you want. Just don't kill me." And the guy's like, "Greedy scum. You want to keep everything for yourself. You peasants are all alike." And sadly, the grandfather ends up dying by the hands of this evil man. The other guys get mad at the other brigand for killing Kyoko's grandfather. They're like, "You idiot! You shouldn't have killed him so soon." He's like, bah, he was just a filthy farmer. They're like, but how are we going to find out, like, where all the valuables are? We got to tear this place apart now. And they're like, yeah, no, we don't. We still have somebody that could help us with his Kyoko, you know. I'm probably butchering her name all to hell and back. And they start to surround Kyoko, and they're like, ah, maybe you will show us where you keep all your valuables, hey, little girl. Or, and like, or do you want to end up like your OG? I don't know how you pronounce that, but grandfather, basically. And then we hear, as they're surrounding Kyoko, over here behind them, the stench of evil is heavy here. And they all the brigands turn around and they're like, huh? What? I am Jay. And Jay shows up. We know who Jay is, obviously, you know. The gods have drawn me to this scene of maleficence. He looks very, very intimidating, to say the least. They're like, oh, troublemaker, huh? And they're like, oh, yeah, this fool, he's not even armed. Let's get him. And Jay has the evilest looking smile on his face. It's very much like he is getting ready to enjoy what he is about to do to these unsuspecting bad guys. So the brigands end up charging Jay. We don't actually get to see the fight happen. It cuts away to the outside and it's raining. All we hear is some crashing and like yelling and whatnot. And we get this scene of the aftermath, blood dripping everywhere, everything's broken. One of the brigands is actually hung up upside down. Everyone is basically dead, it seems like. All the brigands are dead, and the grandpa's dead. Only two people left are Jay and Kyoko are left. And Jay happens to see that one of the brigands actually has a spear. He goes and looks at it. He's like, ah, a new blade to consecrate to the gods, he says. And Jay goes to grab the blade of the spear. And all this energy flows through Jay into the spear, turning it into the blade of the gods. And Jay takes the spear, and he has this evil look on his face, and he turns his head. He's like, and now, and he goes to Kyoko, and she's scared, and Jay goes to kill her, and he stops. And he says, no, the gods see no evil in this little one. And he doesn't kill her. He just walks away. And Jay says, get out of here before you perish in the flames, girl. And he just walks away without even taking her life. And so Kyoko's home erupts into flames. I'm guessing Jay must have set the fire. Who knows? It's not really clear how the house got set ablaze, but it did. And now Kyoko says goodbye to her grandfather. First her mother, now and her father, and now you have left me. I am all alone now. And Kyoko kind of turns to Jay and seeing as him walk away, and she follows Jay, and that is where this particular story ends. Oh boy, I have a couple things to say about this particular short story. Man, it's crazy to see Jay slowly come back and become the formidable foe that he is to Usagi. You know, building himself back up. And it's really interesting to see the world through Jay's eyes is really interesting. And we learn the fact that the blade isn't just one blade. The blade can be any blade, it seems like it, and all Jay has to do is touch it when he imbues the blade with the power of the gods, you know. That's a very, very big revelation, I feel like, in this story. I was shocked to see that actually happened. And the short story was awesome. I love the short story. Every story where Jay is in it, I feel like it makes the story even better. Like, Jay is just so creepy and so dark and menacing. I really feel like he's a really good adversary for Usagi. And throwing a wrinkle or a wrench into Jay's story now, he seems to have a new a traveling companion in Kyoko, you know? And that's really interesting. How exactly will that affect Jay, or won't it affect Jay down the road, having almost like this young girl he has to look after, and how will that affect Kyoko, you know, in a way, you know, because Jay is on a mission to kill everybody, well, kill Usagi or kill the evil, and he thinks Usagi is evil, you know, for what Usagi did to Jay, you know, and whatnot. But it was really interesting to see. I like the horror elements whenever Jay is brought into a story. There's definitely some horror elements brought into it, especially with all the supernatural powers that Jay has, and the little touches that Stan Sakai brought into this story were really good. I feel like all the little subtle details, you know, very much don't show, but you know, you see the aftermath of what happens, the horrific aftermath. You know, it's not like the show don't tell. It's the don't show tell type of thing, I feel like, you know. But all the little touches in that are very, very well done. I love seeing, like, not seeing how Jay operates. You know, we've seen Jay fight Usagi before, but like we don't really see what happens to people. We only see the aftermath of what happens to people. We don't see Jay actually killing anybody, you know, which is really interesting. But he does kill people. It'll be interesting to see where this story goes and how it collides with Usagi's ongoing story, you know, having Jay come back, which, you know, I'm going to be honest, I thought Jay was dead for a while until he showed back up on the riverbanks, you know. But I mean, it's not the first time Jay has come back. You know, Jay has been reincarnated at least twice, you know. So obviously there's some supernatural play in the character and whatnot, but which I love Jay. Jay is so ominous and menacing and whatnot. But yeah, all the creepy little touches Stan put in this, you know, showing the people like dead, slumped over and whatnot, and hung up, and like all this, so creepy, well done, I have to say. I know I'm excited to see where this is gonna go. I feel like it's gonna be something really, really big, to say the least. You know, if I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, is the next time Jay shows up, is that in Grass Cutter? I could be wrong, but I can't remember exactly. It's been a while since I've read, you know, some of Usagi. I'm not done with the saga, Usagi Yojimbo saga yet. You know, I'm halfway through those books, and I don't remember all of it, to be honest. You know, I have to say one detail that I did notice, which I remember, I flipped back just to see. One detail I did notice is that whenever Jay kills somebody in this story, and I think in the last story, no, maybe as well. I mean, I know in this story at least, we don't get the Death's Head little like bubbles that to acknowledge that, you know, somebody has died in the story. We don't get that, which is odd, but interesting to see, you know, like, huh, like why wasn't that a little detail in the story? Maybe I just missed it the first time I read it. I don't know. Maybe it's always been like that for Jay. Who knows? But yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll see you guys on the next episode, and you know, share the podcast. That's the best way you can help the podcast grow. We have a Facebook page, Usagi Podjimbo and Usagi Yojimbo Podcast. You can join and hang out, talk Usagi Yojimbo with people and whatnot. That's where I normally post my episodes. I also post them on the Usagi Yojimbo Facebook page, the fan page, you know. So yeah, check us out, you know, check me out, I guess you could say. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Thanks for listening, and make sure to go read some Usagi Yojimbo.